Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, a podcast dedicated to exploring God's generosity and justice. I'm Alexis Busetti, a Christian aiming to ask good questions and encouraging you to do the same. Every one of us is wired by God to live out generosity and justice, but the how sometimes eludes us. That Makes Total Sense is a way for us to get together, posture ourselves as learners, and challenge one another to practice generosity and justice in a tangible way every day. All right, so you guys missed it. My guest today and I have already, like, we've already been there and back. I've already teared up a little bit. I don't know where this is going to go today, but I'm so thrilled to find out with my friend Jasmine Bellamy. Hey, Jasmine.
How are you?
Oh, I am pumped to be here with you today. That is for sure. How are you?
I am well.
Oh, I'm so excited. So Jasmine has like this really amazing resume that I'm not even going to start with, because I will say I know Jasmine because we're colleagues, we're students together at Fuller. And so that's how I was first introduced, Jasmine. You and I were introduced to each other through the council. And then as we, you know, as we do when you're working with new people and you get to know one another better and better, then I'm like, I think she's corporate. I think she's kind of like, okay, I think she's kind of like New York corporate. And then like, I keep going. And I'm like, okay, Jasmine, spill it. Your current gig is Reebok, but this is like, you're like in this industry. You're like in this fashion industry in a big way. So, I mean, tell us what you want to tell us about that.
Sure. So I've been in first of all, let me start first by saying thank you. Thank you so much for the invitation. To me, one of the most, the most exciting things about life are invitations. And so I really like to look at things that way. So I thank you for inviting me here and allowing me to be a part of this conversation. And I also have to say, I remember when we were in that, that student council forum, I loved you instantly. And so I'm super excited to be able to have this time with you. And I'm here for wherever it goes, and it's going to be fun. So I know that. So I have been in the retail fashion business for almost 30 years. And it has been a career that I've tried to lose at different points in time. Yes. When I got my MBA at one point, I was just like, I've always seen myself as a marketer. So I was like, I'm going to go into consumer packaged goods. But I was so already entrenched in retail that it just didn't make sense. and so I stayed. And, you know, I've worked for great corporate brands, department stores, specialty stores. You know, one of my highlights of my career, and just in terms of brands, because I am a brand lover, I worked for Gap. And so for me, one of the things.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. Yeah. When I was going down, I'm like, that's my favorite.
It's one of, it's such an iconic brand. And I will tell you, my favorite part of being a part of that was being able to walk the streets of New York City, because I am a native New Yorker. And literally every day, wherever I was, I would run into humanity wearing a Gap Arch logo, sweatshirt, t-shirt, whatever. Every day. It was not a day that didn't go by, whether I was in the streets of Manhattan, you know, up on the Upper West Side or downtown or on a shuttle, you know, between a train or in a Starbucks. And what I loved about that is that, you know, I would bring into my office the view of those people because they were our customers. And when we would be in meetings and we might think our customer was away, I had the reality check of who our customer was because I saw them every day. every day wearing our brand proudly. And so I always say that the one thing I wish I would have done was like literally take a snapshot of every human that I saw. I mean, from babies in strollers to men in construction jobs, walking from place to place, that I wish I took pictures of each one of them and that I could have just done a collage of the humanity that really embraced our brand. So I would always, that was just to me, I remember the one that I felt most impacted as I walked around outside of work, if that makes sense. But I've also had the opportunity to work with celebrities and help bring their brands to commercial success. I worked for Venus Williams in the beginning and helped her create her brand, 11. Seeing her win Wimbledon wearing her brand that I helped create is just, I can't even begin to tell you what that feels like and what that means. I worked with Sarah Jessica Parker and helped her create her collection Bitten. I've worked on the other side with people like Nicki Minaj. But understanding who they were, understanding people who had an affinity for them and how to make commercial success out of that in a way that really resonated. So I've had a lot of fun things and to do throughout my career. I've always said that what I've loved about what I do is that, part of my purpose in life is creating possibility. So it is that there is no blueprint. There is nothing in front of you, but you actually can ideate it and create it. And for me, because I am both head and heart and right and left brain and analytical and creative, it all kind of converges together. And I'm able to really rely on both. And my strength as a collaborator, bringing all of the skill sets from other people to bear on that task is what really, really makes it sweet. So, I would say that in terms of where I am now in my career, I'm having the time of my life because all of that is coming together. Particularly not only just me as a business person, but in my theological capacity. I never in a million years would have thought that, one, that I would have been in seminary, two, that I'd be a love practitioner, and three, I'd be doing those things at work.
Right.
Preach. Never in a million years. And so that actually has really, for me, made this season the time of my life because I really am coming to work as my full self.
So I had to stop myself from kicking up my leg, but I'm in my Gap Buttonflies right now.
I love it.
And it's funny. I love the brand. I worked at the Gap in college. And so, because everybody like what we work retail, we wait tables, I did all of those things in college. And it's the problem when people do it in college is they never bring home a paycheck because they just are constantly wearing their paycheck was a problem for me. But anyway, I was a denim specialist. So anybody, that was a thing almost 20 years ago. It's fine.
It's a very important thing.
It was a thing for the business. And so now when I go in, I at least know how to read the tags a little bit. The style is different. But anyway, so yes, I love that when you talk about the humanity though, right? The humanity in the brand, right? Just wearing it and going about our business, going about that. Good night. You never thought you were going to be in seminary.
Never.
I never thought I was going to be in seminary. I feel like that's how we connected originally. It was, we're two women who have no idea. Like, how did we get here?
And I remember specifically in 2018, someone saying to me, someone that knew me very, very well and saying, oh, like, I see you, doing all these things. And I was like, I have an MBA. I'm done with school. Like,
thank you. Yes.
I don't see it. I don't see any of that. And I remember like, what do you see? I see like as a minister or a counselor. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, and I remember thinking that was the craziest thing in the world.
Yes.
And then I remember coming home and having that conversation with my daughter and she completely affirmed it. I absolutely agree with that. I was like, what? Like, I just remember feeling like what has just happened here?
But isn't that great when people, I guess this would be a great place to go, I think, because when people call out in you, sometimes what you can't see in yourself, right? So we were actually chatting earlier, I'll call out my friend Michelle. This is one of the things she does well. She's been on the show and I'll link it. She's super fantastic, but she calls out in people what sometimes they can't see for themselves. And one of the ways she does that, she did this with me when she was coaching me and it was terrible, is she had me text like 10 of the people who were closest to me. And she wrote it. She wrote out this text, right? And she said, I want you to text this out and see what comes back. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when we did that exercise, we started seeing these patterns, right? Of the people who were closest to me, the people who know me the best. And they were calling out what they saw in me, but they were all, a lot of them were calling out some of the same things, but I couldn't really see those in myself. So like your friend and your daughter calling these things out in you that were hidden from you, at least at that point in time. And I feel like that is one of the things, that's one of the things that struck me. And after doing a little bit more kind of really fun research, listening to some of the places where you've been recently and reading some of the places where you've been recently, this is one of the things that you're doing at your job.
And it's so funny. I did the same exact exercise with
people,
which is exactly how I got to the place where I understood I created possibility.
Wow.
How I had this ability to see what was not there. And I hadn't, to your point, identified that as a strength. You know, I would also add, plug for Fuller, where we do Clifton Strength Finders when
yes.
we first start seminary. And when I tell you my Clifton Strength Finders are me to a T. And yes. what I would, and but to that same point though, I had a conversation with someone recently. And when they sent me back a note and their words were almost identical to the Clifton Strength Finder summary, I knew that was a breadcrumb from God.
Wow.
Right? Because when you can start, so my number one and number two are strategic and connectedness. So I see all the dots and I see right. the big picture and I see how they connect and I see them in really quickly in a way that can be overwhelming to most people. And one of the things that person identified, that Clifton Strength Finders also identified, is I also have an ability to help people understand these very complex things, just the way I'm able to put it together. So, but to your point, when you started talking about that ability to call out, I see it as honoring.
Yes.
Right? It's being, you know, one of and we didn't talk about this piece yet, but I'll just jump there for a quick second. One of the DEI behaviors that I rolled out into my organization, so Reebok, is about being open to difference. And when you are open to difference, you actually can see the beauty in the other person. You get to see them as a gift. You get to see what they have to offer and what they are bringing to the table. And oftentimes we just are moving too fast that we don't stop to honor. I love it most really from Martin Buber. Seeing people as thou and not it. And when we do that, you are open to these other possibilities that you would have missed in moving so fast. So I love to do that, right? I stop meetings all the time. When I did it literally yesterday, in the middle of a meeting, to be able to see people and let them know that I see them, and to be able to acknowledge whether it's the progress they've made, how inspired I am by the things that they've done, helping them to see how they've grown in a way that they might not even had seen it. You know, I challenged my team yesterday to write their story. Like, we've had an amazing year, and to make sure they take the time to think about how they shared in that success and how they contributed to that success, to honor themselves. And so for me, honor is, you know, being hospitable, all of those pieces are so critical to drawing out, you know, or if I say it a little bit differently, when we see each other as the Imago Dei, we will see each other very differently. And so when I can see you as God's image and I see the unique creative imprint of you, I can receive that as the gift you are intended to be to me. But and that's because I really do practice in this space of love. And a lot of times we're really busy. We're moving too fast. We're on our own agendas. We're not thinking about anybody else. We're thinking about the to-do list and the 100 things that we have to do. And we're actually not sitting and honoring the image of God in front of us.
Let's take it there, Jasmine, because that's really good. And you're doing this in this space at Reebok, mm-hmm. which is just super fabulous. Now, you know, Reebok has not turned into a theological organization or something like that. You know, it's not a ministry, but you have a ministry at Reebok, in what you're doing, and you officially are the head of, okay, help me, head of direct-to-consumer, U.S. direct-to-consumer, right?
Yeah.
Merchandising, planning, allocating logistics, but you're also this new title, yeah. Head of Change Management, yeah. for the United Against Racism.
Yes.
At Reebok.
Yeah.
So connect those dots for us, in part because I think a couple of things that we've seen, especially since, you know, 2020, is we can see, okay, are there orgs out there or are there people out there, but more specifically orgs and institutions out there who are saying, oh, look, we had some crap hit the fan in 2020, mm-hmm. and it was really gross and messy. And so we're going to have to like put on this DEI hat for a minute and, you know, satisfy, I don't know, shareholders, customers, whomever. So that's kind of one, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it is, you know, so there's kind of maybe like the facade, I guess, like maybe this veneer of like DEI, because that's, you know, is kind of trending and super important. And so we say that. But then there's people and orgs and institutions, I think, who are actually trying to do it, but there might be kind of this intangible heart piece missing, mm-hmm. right? Because it's mm-hmm. easy to check a box. It's easy to say the right things. It's easy to have everyone sign into a meeting and say that this is happening, and for nothing really to change mm-hmm. inside of that institution or that organization or that family or that church or, you know, whatever it is. And I think sometimes that ends up dissipating because people will say, well, I tried it and I did it and nothing really happened. And so then they just go back to status quo, right? And the little view that I have had from what you guys are doing does not look like either one of those things.
Well,
what are you doing and how are you making the connections for real change?
Yeah. So first I will tell you, when I got the call to take on this role, I actually said out loud, why did you ask me? And as those words came out of my mouth, the Holy Spirit was like, you know what I'm asking you. And I was like, okay. Like, okay.
Don't you love how he's so quick sometimes though, right? He's like, what do you mean? Like, put him on hold. We're going to have a conversation, Jasmine, apparently.
Right. So I think the first piece is this. When I was asked to take on this work of culture change, because that's what it was, You know, as an organization, you know, we had been doing the things, you know, we had the employee resource groups, but we got to that moment and we knew there had to be more. And not only did we get to that moment and knew there had to be more, we were very clear also in that particular moment that the success of the organization was directly linked to the Black community. And so much so, if you go back in time, you will see our social media campaign and then we turned them into t-shirts that talked about that brand had been built on the Black community. And so we knew there was no way we could go past that moment without really a reckoning and a need to do something different.
Can I pause you right there? Because the word that just like came into my mind was, what if we all realized our survival depended on one another?
Yeah.
Like, what would this world look like? What would the church look like? What would our communities look like if we literally, exactly what you said, like, this is a brand, yes, this organization, the survival of it. What if we all had that in our heads? Yeah. That my survival is dependent on you, Jasmine, and yours is dependent on me, and mine is dependent on my sons and my husbands, and yours is dependent on your daughters, and we're all, and your neighbor, and your pastor, and your coworker, and whew.
You know why? Because love is interconnected.
Yes, ma'am.
But, and it goes back to the very premise of your podcast, the problem is, we do not come from a space of abundance. We do not operate out of abundance consciousness. We operate out of a scarcity mindset. And so therefore you actually are inhibiting me from getting all the things that I think I should have. And so I've got to push you out the way.
Because the pie's not big enough.
Because I can't thrive if you're here too. And so we're going to get back to the other question, but the whole point is we have to change how we see. And if we can see and understand that there is abundance literally all around us, and if we can see each other as the image of God, if we can see each other as gifts, if we can see each other and receive them each other as hospitably and with honor and understand that we are actually receiving blessing as we receive others, like, it changes everything. It changes your whole posture. And so I can come to this point in my career because I made an intention to practice love. And I made made an intention to cultivate a love practice because I wanted to understand how to live a life of love, right? Because this is the thing. And I've said this before, do we take the word of God seriously? And what it says, there's a reason why it says, love God, love your neighbor as self. Everything, every law, everything falls from that. But we don't actually take that seriously because we actually don't think loving our neighbor is a realistic thing to do. We think it's some pie in the sky ideal. But what I know to be true, it is the hardest work I've ever done in my entire life, but it has transformed my life. And not only has it transformed my life, I've just watched it transform a community for the very thing that you just said. So we just celebrated Global Week of Inclusion, Reebok's Global Week of Inclusion, that I raised my hand to say, we've come a long way and we have our own work to do and our own story to tell and our own moment to sit and reflect. And we need to do this for ourselves. And so in one of the reflections of a team member, they said, we're still here talking about it. Like, I've never been in a company that we're still here talking about it. And so what has happened is we've made this a part of our culture. So it wasn't just that we said, okay, we need to educate everybody on what are the issues of DE&I, diversity, equity, inclusion. So yeah, we did all of the trainings on microaggressions and privilege and unconscious bias. We did all of those things. We did 23 hours worth of training within our teams, but I knew that that was fundamentally not enough. And so it wasn't just here, go watch this training, check off a box, have a conversation and say you did it. I created a platform called Courageous Conversation. And the whole premise behind change management was that, one, we needed to see ourselves as a community. Two, we needed to be able to communicate and have courageous conversations. We needed to have courage, and we needed to be committed to change. And change doesn't mean that I get to decide how you change. Change is all of us doing the internal work and being honest with ourselves and also being graceful with ourselves, understanding where we are, opening to difference, and being open to where we might go. So we created Courageous Conversations as a platform to create a bridge of understanding and empathy. And that's where we started. So when you weren't just doing the training, we had a courageous conversation after the training where we could be in community and have a courageous conversation about it. So we were also deepening the education. So we were going beyond whatever video content you went through, and we were educating. And so I bought in a courageous conversation partner and professional consultant. And we led the organization through, let's talk about this even more. And then let's open up and have a conversation. Now, people have called those conversations a mix of therapy and church.
Wow.
And and that's people just in the chat, just throwing up, like, I felt like, you know, this person ministered to my soul. But then other people have said, this is my therapy for the week. Like, I'm ready to sign up for that. And so to date, we have had 15 courageous conversations since October of 2020.
Wow.
And they have become the lifeblood of our organization. And so courageous conversation, we had over 550 people holding space. And we use that as an opportunity to talk about, educate, announce our global DEI behaviors that we are all going to live by in community. And they came out of all of those courageous conversations that we've been having. They came out of literally the words that out of those dialogues were just naturally arising. I'll tell you a funny story. So this is the funny part about it, right? Like, everybody feels like they know me, right? And I've been in space with them, but I don't know them personally, but people know they know me, which is sweet, right? It's very, very sweet. And so I got an email from somebody this week and they said, I just want you to know, I'm such a fan of yours. And I've been with you. And they actually have. And they said, and you know, one of the things that I noticed that has come up all the time in our courageous conversations is pause. This ability to pause. See what's happening here. How am I feeling in this moment? What might be happening here? And how can I be conscious about the next step that I need? Do you know she made a sticker? And all of her teams have this pause sticker on their laptops. And so someone said, you should tell Jasmine about them. And so she reached out to email me to tell me about her paw stickers and then was like, would you like? And I was like, I would like one. So she
want one. Your address.
I'm gonna get you one. So I say that to say that's like, it is a, it's seeds being planted and it is definitely reaping a harvest all over the place. But just like a little example of that, you know, I had a colleague who wrote me a note after I started to share my story. And he said to me, you know, a white male, he said, he's like, thank you for what you are doing. Thank you for having this platform. And he said, you know, like you are waking me up because I was asleep for far too long. Those like that, his words I carry with me to every speaking engagement because that's what it is about. It is about opening to difference. And really, you know, I love the words of Jeremiah Wright, different does not mean deficient. And like, but what we don't realize that we're up against in culture, particularly in business, that's not how the age of enlightenment has shaped us. When we see each other as competitors, when we see that we're looking to weed out the weak one, when we're like, that is all the antithesis of love. And so I call it joyful disruption in that I'm really looking for a new way to do business. And so if we can do business where we can honor the human that is in front of us and we allow humans to really come to work fully integrated as their whole selves, their gifts can bear on the organization and collectively we can produce great fruit. But I'm going to tell you the one thing that I tackle the most is the culture of fear that is prevalent in business. And that is the opposite of love.
Talk more about that. What, Jim?
Perfect. Love casts out all fear, right? But that whole spirit of fear is what prevents me from showing up as my full self. It is the thing that makes me smaller. It's the thing that keeps me silenced and muted. It's the thing that doesn't make me feel good enough in the space of other people. So as we dismantle this culture of fear and then alternatively create a culture of love, of welcome, of belonging, it allows people to really show up as their full selves. And that is where, when people are really showing up in their full selves with their greatest potential, that is what produces the greatest creativity. And then therefore that turns into product services that we deliver to our customer and increases our shareholder, right? Like that's, like, so that's the thing. It's like, we're not realizing that by, that it's about harnessing that collective creativity that produces what we're delivering to the marketplace.
So what on this subject of fear, mm-hmm. because when you see it in the business world and talked about how the business mm-hmm. world is, you know, affected by the enlightenment, we're all affected by the enlightenment, right? It goes, mm-hmm. you know, kind of goes back to what you had originally talked about, the difference between scarcity and generosity, right? And abundance. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking, what are you seeing? Fears of what in the business world? Because I think that it would probably just translate to us as individuals, as Americans, right? In this American culture, which is very much a driven business, individualized, I get mine, you know, kind of culture. So what kinds of fears or fears of what are you seeing in the business world? Because I just really think that it will translate to us.
Yeah. I mean, one, you go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's based in security. So if I am fearful that my job is at risk, that goes directly to making me insecure. So if I think saying something in a meeting is going to put my job security at risk, I'm going to take an approach that tries to keep me safe. But keeping me safe, if we're focused on that, it can make me small. And it means I'm really not showing up as me. So for me, I will tell you, I am at a place in my career and in a place in my love practice that my security only comes from one place. And that's the divine. So I love my job. I love what I do. I love my team. I love every single thing that I do there. But there's only one person or one being who holds me secure. And so I'm at a place of surrender and trust that I know that the safest place for me is in the center of God's will. What I also know, and this is another piece that goes to what the fear is around. We think we have to know everything. We think we have the answer to everything. And if I know anything, and Paul says it in 1 Corinthians 13:9, we know in part. And so I'm real comfortable with the fact that I know in part, but I know who is omniscient. And so again, if I can be in the center of all that, I don't need to have the answer. But that goes back to that when we think we are driving to our own conclusions all the time and things don't look the way that we are, then we start spazzing out. But it goes, and I literally just wrote about this earlier this week, self-reliance versus God-reliance. I know which way I'm going. Like, it's a no-brainer for me, right? So I don't have to know it doesn't mean that I don't have a vision for my life or the things that I think God is doing and where I might go. But when I tell you I am focused on being present, because if I am focused on being present, that's first of all, that's the only moment we have. Let's start with that, right? So if I'm focused on being present and I am being aligned or I'm in alignment with the will of God in this moment, God is the one directing where I'm going next. So to me, my biggest focus is on making sure I'm following, right? And that I'm aligned, because that is the supernatural power that is going to make all the things that in my limited mind, I can't do anyway.
The thing that came to my mind when you're talking about that. So security one, right? Which that's like, I don't know how much you do Enneagram stuff. I'm an Enneagram 6. And this is like, whew, there is nothing more important to your average 6 than feeling safe and secure. And that is the absolute truth. I used to, at my husband's previous company, he would come home and I would say things like, we had just had our first kids and I was staying at home. And so this was kind of like all this life shift. And he would come home and he would say, I was like, how's your day? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. He's like, I had some meetings. He's like, one of them was boring and I knew it didn't need to be there anyway. And so, you know, I stayed for about 30 minutes and I left and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like what you left, you know, because I'm like, this does not feel secure to me. Like I need you to be everything. I need you to do all the stuff and check the things so that, you know, but he was of course this incredible employee and he did all, you know, and he was not in any danger of losing his job, but I could not handle even his decision-making at work. Right. Because I was just like, I had to have the security. I had to control. Let's stop. Anyway, I had to do all those things, right. Because I was afraid. It was what you're saying. It was a fear driven. Yeah. I wasn't trusting. I was just afraid. And, you know, because at that moment, my security felt like it came from the paycheck that came from that company. Right. And not necessarily from the Lord. But when you were talking about, having the answers, right. There's this, to me, the place that went was identity. And I'll tell you why. It's kind of a weird thing, but I started thinking as you were talking, when I started the podcast, one of the things that I wanted to do was have a space where we could ask questions, right? Because my faith tradition, I grew up in a space that was very much focused on having the right answers. Mm-hmm. And if you have the right answers, then everything's good. And then I started realizing, I don't know that we really know the right answers, you know, to a lot of this stuff that we kind of think we do, or that we say is black and white. You know, I don't know how much of it necessarily is. What would happen if we just started asking better questions, you know, more thoughtful questions? This is a question I'm asking of myself, right? Alexis, what would happen, you know, if you quit trying to have all the right answers all the time and just started trying to listen enough to ask some semi-intelligent questions, which is what I attempt to do on the podcast every week. But there's also this movie that my kids and my husband like that's super annoying to me. But one of the lines in it is that the main character says, okay, fine. You were right. And I was slightly less right.
I love that.
And my kids just love it. And my husband laughs and I laugh because that's him. You know, but it's like, but this identity piece is kind of where, you know, if I can have the right answers, if I can be right, if I can know the things, at least for me, in my experience, that says something about me. Mm-hmm. Except that's really not true. Right? Because my identity is found in who God has made me to be and who I am becoming. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about Michaela O'Donnell, another Fuller woman, and she talked about what freedom there is in becoming.
Amen.
Right? So if we're, you know, that part of our identity, but for me, the identity has been, what do I know? What am I right about? Right. Like, you know, the place and becoming, it does feel a little bit unsafe in some ways if you're not used to it. Right. Because it feels a little bit unstable in some ways, but when we're able to get over that a bit and just say, no, you're unstable. You feel unstable because God is forming you. Like you are becoming, like you're growing. And so it's like, you know, I mentioned earlier, we have a Mastiff, and like when she was in her weird puppy stage, you know, I'm like, she is not a graceful looking dog when she runs, right? She's real lanky and weird, you know, but she was growing, right? She was like growing through this. Her legs hadn't caught up with her ears yet. And it was kind of this bizarro look, but I mean, it's okay to look like that, right? Because we're becoming.
Let me tell you, becoming is one of my favorite words next to transformation. And the difference that we're talking about is being versus doing, right? We're talking about identity versus the performative. And culturally, we are very geared toward the performative. Right. But even, you know, but it's funny, I'm results driven. You could ask my team, like, I'm results driven, but it's much more about me almost competing with myself. And to your point, asking the questions that make me grow even more. I use the same thing in life that I use for business in that sense. And I'm constantly doing introspection to see where I can keep growing and where there's opportunity. Now, there's a couple of things I want to just share with that to balance it a bit, though. I'm also a huge practice of, or grace is a major practice as well. Because in all of these things, we can be overly self-critical and all those things. But what you said that I love is curiosity, right? I literally just posted a reflection today that I wrote 2 years ago, and it was written, and it was about ego. Fun topic. And what I love about all those lovely Facebook memories, in the beginning of the ministry, I wrote every day. That was how God trained me, honestly, to be able to have this conversation. You know, I wrote every day. I had a writing practice for a good 2 hours. But the beauty of that now is that I can actually see those things that I wrote several years ago. I can see how I've actually grown. I can also see how those truths are timeless. And I can actually see the result of my practice because I can see the growth that has happened. So curiosity is asking ourselves, you know, it's funny, in one of my classes, I think we had to ask one of the things that we were going to do from a developmental perspective or whatever, because I'm also a practical theologian. And I said, I am committed to keep like finding better questions to ask. Like that is such a worthy endeavor. Whether it's of ourselves, whether it's of other people, whether it is of institutions and cultures, asking the right and better question is such a skill. And so I say that to say I can ask myself questions that honor myself and also offer myself grace at the same time. But also in doing that, it allows me to open up to see what the Holy Spirit is doing. And when we are, and that allows me to then be in this posture of becoming versus in terms of what are all the things that I am doing? What is the thing that I think I have to pat myself on the back? And it's funny, I'll give you, this is an interesting way to think about it, doing versus being. So I was, you know, recently named as one of the top 100 influential Black women in sports. A couple years ago, that would have felt like a check. Like you've accomplished something. You've reached some milestone. You've done some great thing. When I was asked, like when the person was like, we want to tell your story. And I was like, you want to do what? Like me? Like, why? Like, but what was the gift for me in that was not that I was put on some list to be top. It was the gift of the conversation and the exchange. And what was beautiful about it was that the woman who interviewed me, Madeline Woods, was an icon and on Black entertainment television in the 90s, when I was being shaped as an adult, going out into the corporate world. And she was brilliant and beautiful and bold. And she helped me see myself. So after she got all her interview questions out, and she did a skillful job looking into my story and asking the great questions, I poured into her. I was like, okay, now that we're done, I need to tell you what you've meant to me. And that not only just what you've meant to me, so many women that look like me, you helped us have confidence in ourselves. And so you'll never ever know how many of us, you have a generation of leaders who you shaped and who you were the model for. And you have no idea, but I need you to know that you were. That spirit wrote that article. That was the beauty, is that for me, I could do nothing but weep when I read it, because the way she could tell my story, because of how I also poured into her, there was such a beautiful exchange and honoring that took place in that space. That to me was the beauty of that acknowledgement. Not a list, right? So that's what I'm talking about. When I feel like there's just a whole nother way to live life, to live a life full of love. That is Paul's challenge to us in Ephesians. And what I've learned is to actually put that word into practice. That's what I'm building on. And so what I know, I say these words all the time, I know it to be true. It is my lived experience. And so my invitation is really for others to do the same, to walk alongside me in their own journey, living a life full of love, because we have no idea And to, if I go back to your other question too, it is supernatural power that comes to bear on our behalf when we do that. It is not about us driving to our own conclusion. It is not about us operating in our own strength. When we operate from or through a lens of love, we bring the Holy Spirit to bear with us, to knock down walls, to push through tension, to create transformation, to plant seeds that later grow, to change in a way that we cannot do by ourselves. So Reebok couldn't be transformed on my agenda. Reebok could be transformed because I opened up an opportunity for an exchange and for conversation and for understanding and for inquiry and for openness and for people to see each other and to find strength in community. And that is transformative. Because what I knew before I started that work, this work is spiritual work. And I will tell you, I got hit with, when I really came to that, I sat there and I literally said out loud, how do I do spiritual work in a secular space? And the moment I said it, the answer was already there. And it's the answer has guided me through it all. But it's recognizing it and literally allowing the Holy Spirit to guide me to have access to this space, to change hearts and minds, renew hearts and minds, to transform people, to help people grow in a way that Jasmine Bellamy never could. I just was able to use my influence to create the space for it. And so that's when I can't even begin to tell you, I get included on so many people's emails where they give their testimonies about what they feel about being in the community and the culture and the reason why they came here, because they knew I couldn't have done that. That was not in my own human strength. But it is the change agent. It is the counselor. It is the transformer. It is the breath of life that is creating new life in the hearts and minds of people. And when we position ourselves for love to enter, all of those things are accessible to us.
Jasmine, we just went to church.
Listen.
And therapy. I mean, we're in a courageous conversation right now. So
we are.
But you know, I mean, that's kind of a good place. You know, when I was reading about your creative conversations and kind of exploring that a little bit more before we talked, I thought, yeah, because if love is anything, it's courageous.
It sure is.
Right. And it fills us with courage, but love is not easy. That's not in the Corinthians chapter right there. Oh, love is easy. It's fine. Love is courageous. To act out of love is to act in courage.
The hardest work you've ever done. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever
yeah. done. Yeah. Gosh, here's the truth. I would say I could talk to you all day, but unlike some of my other guests, I get to talk to you at school and in meetings and things like that. And so I'm super thankful for that. As we start to close up this conversation though, I have a couple of questions and I'll just I'll just leave you to answer them. First, you know, as we end, I want you to tell us, I'll put it all in the show notes, but the places that where we can find you. But the other thing is, and I did not prep you for this, but do you have off the top of your head any resources that you just think if people are interested in their own spaces and communities or for their own edification, at least to start, because it's about the community for sure, it's about connectedness. Any resources that you have found that really, it doesn't have to be necessarily like on topic, doesn't have to be DEI, doesn't have to be anything like that, but just some of those places that have been really meaningful for you or that you've seen have impact in communities that you have worked with that maybe are accessible for other people, just to kind of get those balls rolling in the head, right? To start to think about what are some questions that I could start asking, or how could I move towards love and towards people in a courageous way?
Yeah, I mean, I would of course first send people to my website or to the ministry's website, love101ministries.com. There in there is a 7-day devotional to begin to figure out what it is to practice love. Because to your point, it's not easy, it's not emotional, it's not some warm, fuzzy feeling, right? It is a conscious act of unselfish concern for another without losing yourself.
Right.
And honoring God, right? The image of God in you too. And so I would just say that's an easy place to start, to get to feel, especially to connect the theological to the practical, because that's what my whole work is that it's not just some words that we hear. We don't just say God is love and keep it pushing, that it's actually, that means it's my DNA.
It means I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. We don't just say God is love and keep it pushing. So,
right. That it's like, it is literally about how do I build a house on that foundation, right? That is not sand, right? Like it's all of that. So it is really the good. I'm of the mindset that love is a critical element of the Missio Dei. That's just, we don't talk about it, but it is, right? So
right.
I'm really about helping us to understand that, because when we have that as our foundation, we will operate appropriately in terms of any challenge or tension that arises. And that's why for me, love is the practice that is the framework for the justice, diversity, equity, and inclusion work that I do. It is all from a posture of love. I will say what I'm reading today, first of all, there's 100 books literally on the side of my bed. But the one that I've been reading slowly that just sets my heart on fire is All About Love by Bell Hooks.
Oh, okay.
But you know, the interesting thing is, I'll say this really quickly as we come to end. What I love about my journey for me is that it literally has been revealed truth along the way. What's funny about that is it's revealed truth to me, like literally things I've never thought of, heard of, but the words have come to me. But the beauty of being a seminary student is that I've been able to go back to across centuries and actually find that people said the very same thing. And so while I believe that when I came up with, or it was revealed to me that love is a practice, I had no idea that Bell Hooks said it before me and Eric Fromm said it before her, or probably even Augustine, right? Do you see what I'm saying? Like I had no idea, but it was revealed in me. But what's been great is now I can go back and see the building blocks. So I say that to say, Bell Hooks is All About Love has just definitely been warming my spirit these days. So that would be a particular recommendation that I would offer in addition to the Love 101 Ministries website.
Isn't that so, that's just been really affirming to me too, right? To see our church foreparents and what they experienced and what was revealed to them, you know, by the Holy Spirit. And it's exactly as you say, you know, and sometimes I think, well, we look so different, you know, than our, you know, we don't practice asceticism in the same way, or we don't do, you know, this or that, or I'm not living in a monastery for sure, you know? But it's like, but people are people, right?
Well, and to be honest, for me, Augustine, Teresa of Avila, mm-hmm. Henry Nouwen, bell hooks, all of them equally impact me.
Yes, yes.
All of them together. Yes. I just finished reading Interia Castella the other day, and I was just like, oh, everything that I've just gone through my own personal transformation, she understood it.
Wow, yeah.
Like, so I know I'm not alone here, right? Like, I'm like, Holy Spirit, I knew, but now I for real know that she knew too. And that feels great.
See,
affirmation,
that's,
and confirmation. Like, I love it.
That's like a whole other conversation that I'm like, well, we'll just come back. We'll have it another time. We'll have virtual coffee. But this whole idea of the church community, including our ancestors, right? Hello. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this was like not on my radar for, oh, I don't know. 38 years is fine. Yeah. Right. And it's like, but this is part of our community. You took Dr. Bantu, and he always talks about the Hebrews verse, right? Of like, of our forefathers. Right. And it's like, oh my goodness, this is just so good. So anyway, well, come back and we'll talk theology. Like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jasmine. This time has been so special for me. And so, as we prayed before we started, and I just want to say that now, I just pray that it is a blessing, that first, that it was a blessing for you and that it will continue to be, but also that just everybody who's listening and everyone who hears this, that they would just be able to take something from the Spirit and run with it wherever he would have them to go. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
The links for all the resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes. Music and podcast production by Seth Busetti. Be sure to give us a review on iTunes and subscribe at your favorite podcast listening app. You can also visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com.